Hello, this is Jay Nimro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 686. Part 3 of the speech. Going a lot longer than the speech ever would. I only anticipate it being like a 20-minute speech at best. Certainly written out, it's not terribly too, it's not too terribly long. But let me tell you, are we milking this sucker for all we can get? Man, the last episode, part two of this run, hopefully this will be the concluding one, we'll find out. We talked about, itch my nose. I sound like Lisa. Lisa says, itch my nose. Pardon me. That's when we started talking about the allegory of the building. We're going to finish that up. But, and then I got into these horribly huge, swooping tangents into some of my experiences with society, fitting in, according to the analogy, being in the building. And what I finally decided I came to was that the few times I had been in the building, it was either by accident or just because of circumstances. And I think that kind of reflects the fact that I'm never in something for the reason everybody else is. Don't ask me why, I just never am. Never have been, probably never will be. I'm just not that kind of guy. If I'm doing something, if I'm involved in something, it's probably for a different reason than... No, not always. I mean, gee whiz. I take a drink of water because I'm thirsty. I don't take a drink of water because, something else. Let's not get crazy. But by and large, if there's some stated reason, kids become part of this organization because they want to get this, and this. And they'll say, why is Jay part of it? And you go, I don't know. It was sad. When I was in the Maternal and Child Health Council, a local county one, and I don't want to disparage what they do, because I think it has great value, and I think it's very important. And I think taking care of people who lose, I have sympathy for people that lose. My problem is that very rarely can I actually help them. Honestly, I'm not in a position where I can really do much for those people because my experience is so vastly different from theirs. And if I try to go out and help them, I'm going to be helping them in ways that I think are good, and that's usually not right. Either they won't understand or they'll get upset or unhappy. And it's like, well, what good is any of this? So, when I was in the Maternal and Child Health Council, do you know why I did it? And I know this seems funny because people say, oh, the pay's so crappy there. But I did it for the money. I needed a job. I needed something to do. I certainly had a skill set for what they needed. And I find myself much more useful as a support person than as anything else. I can't advocate for people. Somebody else needs to do that. Even if my title is advocate, I will try to find background things to do, and let those who really have authentic hearts and souls, does that sound bad? Human heart and souls, local hearts and souls, I will let them do it. And I'm not trying to denigrate those people at all. You need those people. Sometimes I need those people, although I try not to. Like I said before, I've never said in the context of being an alien, but sorry. Ow. Oh, my knee hurts. I try to take the wilderness ethic everywhere I go. I try to tread really lightly because, you know, people say, well, no, you should have a big footprint in some circumstances. And you go, ah, maybe with my children. Maybe with my children. Not so much with my wife. I love my wife dearly. I'm very grateful for her. I love her. I'm very thankful for her. But I don't want to go goofing up her life. I don't mind having a big footprint with my kids because my kids are a product of me. You know, my wife isn't a product of me. We grow together and hopefully grow towards something that's good. You know, I want to be sacrificing more for her than she's sacrificing for me. Because I know in trying to come my way, it requires huge sacrifices, and I don't think that's appropriate. Anyway, so I'm sorry. Now, there was an interesting tangent, but where did it even begin to come from? I don't know. Okay, let's talk about in the building and out of the building now. I think we've got the scenario all set up from the last episode. If you didn't listen to the last part, part two... Pardon me. Let me get a drink here. You might as well go back and listen to it. Because I'm not going to go over it again so you can have insight. I'm not going to try to give you a little reduced version so you can just jump right in. You'll have to go back and get it. The joy of having it recorded and having it in the podcast. You can do that. It wasn't like the old TV where you had to have, you know, if you had a two-parter of a TV show, you know, you basically have to give them the entire storyline of the first one before the second one because you never see the thing again. Uh-oh. Somebody broke down? That would be bad. They need some help. Uh-oh. I see what looks like torn up tires and such. Oh, they've already got some help. Okay. Don't look very happy. I'm sorry. Reacting to things I see. Okay. Oh, how convenient. Porta potties. Oh, this is where they usually stop people when the missiles are being shot. I am now passing through the White Sands Missile Range. This is very close to the Trinity site where they blew off the first atomic bomb. Welcome to New Mexico. We're basically known for places out in the middle of nowhere where people can do unspeakable things and nobody ever really has to know what happens. Although I guess they did actually announce that one. Anyway. All right, so... you're in the building. You got the whole scenario set up. Now let me talk to you a minute about the stuff that I was alluding to somewhat on about the fact that we were going to get a little religious. And you know, you can say, well, I don't believe that. And you go, well, if you don't, you're stupid, and that's why. Because it's true. You know, I don't believe in things because somebody tells me to believe them. Do I give the impression of being somebody who is a simple follower and joining the crowd around me? No. Well, then that means that you have more of a likelihood of getting honesty out of me, and certainly a different perspective. I'll always give you a different perspective because I always have a different perspective. Anyway, come on, Jay, think about this. Okay, we're in the building. Well, no, I'm not in the building. A lot of people are in the building. a lot of folk are in there. Just because, for a variety of reasons. The biggest one is they want to fit in, you know. The biggest, worst crime in the universe is alluded to in part one of this little triad, this little triplet here. Couple, whatever you call it. The whole reason for being in there is to fit in. You know? The worst crime is to not fit in. Not to be a part. To be inappropriate. Inappropriate laughter. Can't have that. Behaves inappropriately toward danger. Stuff like that. I think that's one that was written by people who use fear tactics to get people to do what they want. And the first thing they really don't want to see is my son Matt just ignoring what they say and going out and doing what they want to do, because Matt might be able to get away from it, and then other people will see that they could probably do it too. But you don't want to do that. Fear is a very important way to keep you from doing stuff that your betters do not want you doing. Places where they don't want you exploring, don't want you really playing much with You know, it's just a very powerful way, you know. The societies around, or the rules around society, kind of set themselves. And the way it's done is quite rude and nasty, you know. Most fear and pain and torture and stuff like that isn't actually a natural reaction. You know, you don't tend to get hurt because you've done something that by nature is going to get you hurt. You tend to get hurt because when you do something that somebody else doesn't like, they will hurt you. And that's how they keep you from doing it. You know, I'm a natural consequence guy. I like things that are more natural, more real, more authentic. And society has nothing to do with nature. Society sets up its own funny rules, and then it sets up a crud load of punishments and people to deal out that punishment, because under natural circumstances, under normal circumstances, a lot of the things that they are quote-unquote protecting you against aren't really stuff that would hurt you anyway. You know, we tend to write rules for the stupidest and most klutzy in our world. And, you know, don't climb mountains. You could fall off. But it's like, well, thousands of people climb mountains. Very few people fall off. But we want to make sure that nobody does. So, you know, we station people around the mountain with billy clubs to show you that you really shouldn't climb a mountain because, you know, you could get hurt. And you go, yeah, there's guys with billy clubs ringing the mountains to make sure that you get hurt if you even think about trying to climb them. You know, is that right? You go, well, I don't know. You know, there's plenty of people who say, yes, that's better because we need to keep people safe. And you go, no, it sounds like you need to keep people subdued. That's more important. So anyway, okay, so, I'm sorry. I keep there's a good, nice, kind of wispy tangent I got there. I kind of like that one. Let's go ahead and bring in the character, the next character. You've got your wonderful little vacant building. It's got all your goodies and all your stuff like that. You know, everything's great. Man, fantastic. You get to pick on the people on the, you know, you get to yell down to people on the outside and yell insults at them, and they just kind of sit there and either take it or they wander off. And It's always funny when you see somebody want, you know, when you taunt them, when you treat them crappy, and then they start to walk away. What's the natural reaction of the person who's yelling at you when you start walking away? They start calling you a chicken and a pansy. Why? Because they want you to stay right there and keep taking it. Oh, you're giving up, huh? Oh, you're such a wimp. You're such a weenie. You know, it isn't because they want you to stand up to them. That's not true. They want you to stay right there because it's fun to do these things to you. It won't be fun anymore. They'll have to try to find somebody else to pick on. Have you ever realized that? It's very interesting. Anyway, so, you got the whole thing set up. I'm on the outside. Not that it's a really big issue. This is what happens. The owner of the building, now, nobody supposed the building even had an owner. This is the first little snifter of semi-religious stuff. People often say there's not a God, and the evidence that they give basically is to kind of sweep their arm across the expanse of things and say, well, where is he? Have you seen him? And you go, well, no. And you go, okay, there's no God. That would be like these kids in this vacant building saying, hey, this is our building. We came here. We sell this stuff up. It's ours now. And they go, well, there's no owner. And you go, have you, you know, here comes the big arm sweep showing you all the expanse. Do you, you know, where's the owner? Do you see the owner? No. Well, then there's no owner. It's ours. We can just come. We can just take it. In this analogy, the building is actually the world. I mean, you could put it down to like being a country or a city or some other kind of conglomeration. But when I think about it, I think about the world in general. And you'll see soon here why I say that, why I think along those lines. Oh, excuse me. Many people don't believe in God because they've never seen God on this world. God doesn't make many appearances here. Honestly. Very few. I'm trying to think how many times we have recorded. I think it's maybe 3, 4. Well, if you're not counting the Garden of Eden and the fact that he spent a lot of time there just trying to get things kind of finished up, I guess, or maybe just checking just to make sure everything was working right. I don't know. But just because he's not here now doesn't mean he could not come later. Christian thought, and I don't know if this extends to Judaism? I don't know. People talk about the apocalypse. It's another name for the last book in the modern New Testament, called by some the Revelations of St. John the Divine or whatever. It speaks about the time when God will come. Christ perhaps will come. In many cases, these gentlemen are interchangeable. Christ is God's agent. You know, he acts in the stead of God. Some people think they're the same thing. They're not, but, you know. Christians get all this weird. I'm sorry, I'm not going to jump on the weird Christian thought bandwagon. Anyway. God's going to come. But let's go back to the analogy. The owner comes. Of course, in the analogy, the owner is God. Okay. The owner comes, right? And he just comes in and he just cleans house. Now, the people that are in there, they're going to complain. They're going to moan. They're going to gritch. They're going to exert what they feel like are their legal rights, which they don't have. They're not the owners. They're squatters. Squatters, except in some funny municipalities, have no rights. Doesn't matter how long you've squatted on there, except in some very interesting municipalities. States, perhaps. Or other countries. You know, you don't have rights. It's his place. This is what he does, where he lives. It's his stuff. So he just comes and he cleans it out. It doesn't matter what everybody says. All the people that are in the building... Okay, maybe I got this wrong. Maybe the whole neighborhood is the world. The building is just where the in people are. You know, because there's people on the outside, the out people. Okay, well, he comes in, you know. Obviously, the people who have been in the building have been breaking the law. They did not have permission to be in the building. They didn't ever seek it. They just saw an empty building and just kind of took it over. Decided they were going to have fun with it. Whatever it is they do. You know. And, of course, they were breaking the law, so he sends them. Now, they're children, remember. He sends them all off to reform school. Now, he doesn't sit there and try to ponder about who are nice kids and who are bad kids. Who are this and that. I don't know if this is where the analogy falls down or not. But I do say this, and I'll give you a reason why I say this is true, is this. It says he doesn't waste his time trying to figure out who should be punished for having done all this. That can all be sorted out at some later time. Everybody who's in the building gets put up, gets rounded up and put in the paddy wagon. That's it. The fun ride is over. Now, the people on the outside, they're on the outside. There's no big deal, but, you know, they're okay. They haven't broken some law. They're allowed to live their lives just like they always have. But the people inside, they don't. They get rounded up. They get thrown off to reform school and never see them again. I don't care what they do. I don't care what their lives are after that. They're gone. Doesn't matter. Whatever they're doing it somewhere else. Let me tell you a story about, that's a pretty interesting setup. Let me tell you a story about prison. I have some experience with prison. I've worked in prisons. A prison, sorry. It makes it sound like I've worked in several. I've worked in a prison. I went through their training program, how they deal with people, how they deal with their employees, try to make sure their employees avoid getting into messy entanglements with inmates. Inmates are the people who are locked up in the prison, just in case you're wondering. I have never been locked up in a prison. Not even because of customs violations. I've been really fortunate. I'm thankful. We are taught what will happen in a riot situation. This was particularly poignant. The prison I went to work for had a huge riot. One of the guards got killed. It wasn't really a murder. Got killed in the riot, so it was very, very, you know, they were very particular. They named names, they pointed out circumstances. People had horror stories from it and about how these things go. And they said, this is what happens. You know, these riots typically happen with regular people, prison corrections officers, other prison workers, in with the population. That's where it usually takes place. You know, it isn't just prisoner on prisoner. Everybody, you know, there's some unspoken weird code about the fact that you don't, you know, you can pick on each other, you can pick a fight, you can even have a decent little size fight, but things tend to be very low key. Bad things still happen, but they happen somewhat on the quiet side, on the sly. These things don't happen when you have a riot. A riot is when you have like a pressure cooker of a situation, and somebody's been doing something, and it's not being resolved, and the inmates typically feel like they have no choice, or they feel like it's just gone far enough, and they're not going to take it anymore, and that's when they grab some, they grab two or three people, and they start to riot. It has a whole lot to do with energy levels. If you can keep an energy level in a prison down, low, that's why it's good to have them on chain gangs and stuff like that, because that means their energy is low. You don't want them to get particularly strong or buff or things like that, and then leave them with no way to work those things out. Sometimes that's why they have a weight room, is to work out that energy. And so that's why they do have workout rooms. They just don't give them a lot of really heavy weights. Some do, I guess. You know, I don't know. Ours didn't, for the simple reason. They said, yo, we're just here trying to work out frustrations. We're not here trying to make you strong enough that you can overpower somebody. You know. And you can do that to a degree. You know. Guys who are allowed to bench press 400 pounds in the weight room, you know, you don't want people like that. You want people to be kind of skinny, kind of flabby, and not causing you problems. Anyway, so in a situation where you have a riot, this is what will happen. They will typically take hostages. You know, when hostages get taken and people start yelling, it raises the whole energy level, and then all of a sudden you start getting all kinds of stuff happening. It usually ends up being prisoner on prisoner, just trying to kill each other. Well, I guess it wouldn't be terribly obvious to somebody who hadn't been in the circumstance. But there are prisoners that don't want trouble. There's a lot of prisoners that don't want trouble. They want to do their time and they want to get out. You know, they aren't there because of something violent. Many of them are just there on drug possession, things like that. Things that we've gotten so mean and vindictive about that the prisons are now full of, you know, people who are just kind of, hey man, I was just doing a drug drop off for somebody and I got picked up and now I'm in here. And I'm, you know, and they're, you know, and they don't want to mess with anybody. There's plenty of hotheads, too. Nobody's saying they're not any hotheads. But there are certain groups. So these groups will start these kinds of things, trying to get people to kind of calm down. And other guys are trying to rev things up, because that works in their favor. And so this is the kind of stew that a riot happens in. Well, this is the procedure that I was taught on how riots get handled. Most of our cell blocks I wouldn't say sealed, but I think people are used to the whole concepts of bars. I don't see bars very often. I never saw very many bars in the prison I worked in, which was very modern. In fact, when I got there, it had only been built for maybe 2 or 3 years. Things are now done with plexiglass. plexiglass is a whole lot better. Because with bars, you know, people can get themselves, you know, entrenched in them. Other prisoners can try to run you through them. Just basically not a good scene. Bad thing. It does keep people in, but it doesn't keep people from getting hurt. And one of the important things about corrections is you're supposed to do your time, but by and large, the state is responsible for your life. They want you to live. You know, they have to make sure you're well cared for physically because they have to release you at some point. And at that point, they would get sued if you were released in poor condition because of the conditions you face in the prison. You know, the prison has to basically release you in the same basic state you were when you came in, only so many years older. So yeah, you know, and when you handle a riot, you must handle it in a way that does not really hurt people. So almost everything isn't separated by bars. They're basically separated by large, solid metal doors that can be locked, you know. But they also want to be able to see into places. A lot of bad things can happen in corners that can't be seen. Modern prisons are designed kind of in a circular fashion, or in rings, or things like that. We actually call them pods. And they are made so there really aren't any particular corners anywhere. At least not a corner where you can't see what somebody is doing. You want to be able to see every single part of every single thing that's going on. So a lot of places where you would think there would be walls or bars to keep people in, we don't have that. They put in very thick plexiglass now. Plexiglass that cannot be broken through. You know, I don't care how big of a thing you throw at a thing of plexiglass, especially this stuff, it'll bounce off. You know? You might scratch it. I'm not saying you won't scratch it, but you aren't going to bust it. Because it's just that thick. Anyway, so. Alright. Inside, in those plexiglass windows, we call them the windows, because that's what they were clear, you could see through them, were usually what we call portholes. And for a little while, I didn't know what those portholes were for. Basically, maybe about 4 inches, maybe 5 inches around holes that have been drilled in this thing. The inmates and the guards often use these when they're on two sides of a wall to communicate. And a lot of people thought that was what they were for. These are for communication. And they aren't. Or that isn't the bigger reason, perhaps. Or that's just one of the reasons. The other reason is they're just the size so that you can inject into that room the gas. Almost any time now, when you're handling something along the lines of a riot, if you're handling an individual person, you tend to use different circumstances. If you're dealing with more than two or three people, you're going to handle it as if it were a riot. If it's a hostage taking or anything like that, it's almost handled exactly the same. And this is what happens, besides the fact there's no negotiations, nobody really talks, nothing really happens. All it does is that canisters of gas are fired into the room. Of course, you know, depending on how big the room is, how many canisters of gas get shot in there. Or at least this is the way it was explained to me. And what happens is the gas neutralizes everybody. If you've ever been gassed before, and I never have, but I've heard the stories of the people who have been gassed, this stuff takes you down. You can't see because your eyes are just tearing to to the point to where you can't blink away the tears. Your nose is running so hard you can hardly breathe. This is not made to kill you. This is made to immobilize you. And it's made to immobilize you for a space of time. It isn't just until the gas clears. You know, you'll be down for quite a while. Sometimes a variation on pepper spray or whatever. It'll immobilize you. You will not be able to function. You will not be able to fight back. You will not be able to do all the things that you would normally do for the simple reason that you can't do that. We were instructed that if this happened to us, if we just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and something happened that they required gassing, their only advice to us was to get on the floor. It wasn't to evade the gas. There is no evading the gas. There might be, I don't know, but that wasn't the reason. The whole reason of getting down was so that when they came in and started to subdue people, you would get less hurt by already being on the floor. Prisoners who are getting trapped, even if they're in a gas situation, will tend to flail around. And if they hear sounds, they will try to attack the sounds. Even though they can't see it and they can hardly function, they will still try. And so subduing is required. Everyone is subdued. Everyone is put into the little black, what do they call those things? The black zip ties. You know, the things where they go zip and it tightens up the little plastic tie. You've probably seen them on some products. Those things are also used to as temporary handcuffs for people. They're not pleasant. They aren't made to be nice and relatively comfortable. You know, they're made to be very quick and get the job done very fast. You will be subdued. You will be knocked to the ground if you're not already on the ground. And you will be, you know, you'll have your arms and your legs bound. You will stay like that, they said. You may stay like that for some hours while we sort through people and what happened and things like that. During that time, you should, number one, you're going to be, you know, gassing creates all kinds of bad reactions in the first place. But in addition to all that, you know, they said be compliant. Be compliant. You may get treated roughly. You know, COs tend to get kind of belligerent when they've had something really bad happen, you know, especially when they feel like they might be held responsible for it. You know, and you have to understand, that's human nature. You know, that isn't like, oh, those horrible, nasty people. It's like, hello, get a grip. That's human nature. People will do that. You know, if somebody beat the crap out of you and all of a sudden you have the upper hand on them, most people will start kicking back in retaliation. It's a few people who have the kind of self-restraint that they won't do that. I know people tend to look at, like, fairy tale stories and stuff like that about how wonderful and noble people are. And so many of them. And you go, well, that's all well and good, but what expects this? You know, when police are brutal and people scream police brutality, don't get too weird. This is the world that they have to deal with. It's a very violent world. You can't go in there as a peaceful, peaceful Gandhi-type person and come out unchanged. You know, those people don't get into law enforcement because they don't tend to make it. Very rare people that do. You know, they're going to be, you have to be rough and tumble. You have to be able to take hits and get them out. So it's just going to happen. and you don't get weird about it. You know? Lawyers are confrontational because that's their job. Their job is to be confrontational. Their job is to, if they're your lawyer, hopefully his job is to defend your rights against people who have absolutely no interest in being nice about it. About saying you don't have any rights. So yeah, do you want somebody confrontational? Yes. We have special people that do that. They seem to be drawn to it. Tough as nails, mean, hard, nasty sorts of people. The whole idea that, you know, you have a nice advocate and how wonderful they are to you and how mean, nasty pit bulls they are in the trial, I think that's a minority. That's why you have... You don't just hire a lawyer. You hire a law firm. Because there's some people that spend their time dealing with you. And they're nice people, you know. They're in charge of getting clients and keeping clients and keeping clients happy. They may do your contracts for you. These are not the same people that will argue your case in court, because the guy that argues your case in court, you know, I'm sorry. Good lawyers will pull stunts. They go straight for the jugular. They are not kind, nice people by and large. You know, I'm not saying all of them are, but I'm saying if you really want the best person, you're going to get somebody who really cleans house, you know, really gets the job done. Appeals to this, appeals to that. That's why you have a team. And that team decides which person is best suited for whatever situation when you're going through like a court proceeding, for instance. So I don't want you to get weird about how people behave. Because I'm going to tell you right now that God, when he comes through to clean house, he is not coming to say, okay, boys and girls, it's time to pick up this mess, and then we'll go someplace else now. A lot of people preach that this is God. You know, that God is that kind of a person. That God's a little fresh, you know. In a matter of speaking, you know, Christians would be really offended if I said that. But I did, so there it is. God, you know, God's coming to clean house. That means he's probably going to have a, you know, he's going to be coming in, knocking people down. The allegory given in Revelation just to prove that if you think God is a nice, sweet, tender person, and in some ways I suppose he is, but he's also a guy that just gets these things done. Now, he may send in surrogates. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know if he sends in a brute squad to go beat everybody up. I don't know that. But what I do know is he's not going to treat people with kid gloves. It will be like a prison riot takedown when this world gets taken over. When that building gets re-entered by the owner, he is not coming with a piece of paper and a warning that gets laughed at. He is coming in with the stormtroopers. They will come in with gas and stuff. I seem to believe that when God comes to kind of take back over his world, which we're sitting on, he's going to do it with fire. I seem to recall that was the wording. Now, people might think, oh, that's just an analogy. And you go, I don't know. Do you want to give him a shot? The God that I know has no compunctions at all. The guy I knew from the Old Testament killed millions of Jews just because they wouldn't do what he said. And I know a lot of people say, oh, I don't like God. I don't like the God of the Old Testament. He's a mean old nasty sucker. And you go, it's the same guy. God hasn't changed. God will be that way again. Of course, I don't know if all the really peace-loving, wonderful people are going to just, you know, decide they want nothing to do with God because he isn't as nice as they had hoped. I'm sorry. I can't change the man's nature for you to make him seem nicer for you. And if they say, oh, but Christ is that wonderful, peaceful, mild, meek person. Don't forget that he was the guy who took the cat of nine tails, or whatever, who brayed the whip. I think that might be closer to the actual wording. And drove out the money changers. He didn't just say, okay, boys, you need to go now. You shouldn't be here. This is bad. He didn't do that. He took a whip and he whipped them. I can only imagine that it wasn't just a threat, because you know what? When I deal with money changers, and I mean money changers, I mean pawn shop people. These are people who make deals. These are people who trade in sacrificial animals. These are people who aren't kind-hearted. The animals they are selling to you will be brutally slaughtered. That ain't compunctions at all in about 5 seconds. Okay? These are not people who have problems. These are not squeamish folk, I think. So, when Jesus came to wipe them out, it's like, no, I don't think he was a nice guy. I think he was cleaning house. Does that sound familiar to cleaning this building out? Getting out these people? That's what's going to happen in the future, according to the Bible. I'm not going to interject anything weird. I don't want you guys to start thinking, oh, well, where do you get this crap from? So, hey, man, most of you guys say that you believe these things. Oh, I believe the Bible. And you go, right. I always think that's kind of suspect, because when they start telling me about Jesus and about God and how they are and stuff like that and how things are, you know, oh, well, you know, that's a figure of speech. Yeah, that's a figure of speech. And you go, you know what? I don't think so. I don't think it is. I think they were being quite literal. I think God really does, you know, bust heads and take names. I think he's that type of a guy. I think he has a very long... I think he's patient, but I think once you've worn out his patience, he's not... he isn't the sweet guy you had hoped. When he faces those people, then he just has to get out of the way. Do I think he used restraint? Sure. I do think he used restraint, just like the people in the riot do. All the procedures done in the riot are made to protect everyone involved, even the perpetrators. Even the bad guys get protected. If a bad guy is a prison inmate and he does something bad, where do you send him? To the prison, right? He's already there. So, you know, you can't punish him much worse. You have to understand what's happening there. So that's kind of what's going to happen. I think I've made it kind of clear that it's going to also be something that happens in a very visceral sense. When God comes. I said, it's going to be a riot situation. There's going to be a lot of people that just aren't happy. I guess the question becomes, you know, are you prepared for that kind of circumstance? This isn't right. I'm in the wrong lane. I hate big towns. I am now in Las Cruces, and we're getting to the end of this stuff. Let me go ahead and say, so, anyway, all the people in the building will be taken off. They will go to some form of reform school. We will not be seeing them again. Or, you know, you won't see them for a very long time. Or if you see them, you'll see them through bars or plexiglass, sorry. You know. Other circumstances. But it won't have much to do with you anymore. You may have to testify as to what they did, but that's all. You know, and they may very well try to be threatening like they were trying to be, you know, when they were free. You know, I'll get you, I'll find a way to get you, and you can feel intimidated, I guess, but I think it'll be pretty honest to say they can't do anything to you. Trust me. It says it's over for them. The whole question is, how bad does over get to be for them? So, let me try to tie this all up in a nice, cute little bundle for you. Try to give some context to everything I've said, all three parts, and come to my little conclusion here. And it isn't going to be a nice, tasty conclusion, I'm sure, because I really haven't finished up the talk yet. I can't say I've really got it nailed down, particularly. I'm getting closer, but I'm not there yet. Anyway. So, here's your takeaway from all these things. Number one, I'm an alien. There may be others, I'm pretty sure there are. But, let me just give you the 911 right here. I'm an alien. I have a unique perspective on things that you may not have because you're too close to all these circumstances. You live in this swill. I may live in this swill too, but for some reason I'm kind of immune to it, just like I was in school. In school, I kind of floated through it and just kind of, whatever. I was mostly a whatever person. But I have a unique perspective. And so, this is my unique perspective. Let me give you a couple of phrases to help you know this. Number one, God will punish the oppressors. If you're feeling oppressed, if you're feeling like somebody's taking advantage of you, if you're getting beat up, if bad things are happening to you, let me tell you one thing that should comfort you, make you feel better, and try to convince you not to get into retaliation mode, because it's not useful. You'll more likely than not just get more hurt and have more problems trying to retaliate against things. God will punish the oppressors. If you've been oppressed, God will handle it. God will solve the problem. You don't have to get involved. It's just like when you would go to court and, you know, into some real court, sorry. I don't mean to be rude to earthly tribunals, but a real court, you have to know that if you testify against somebody, they can never touch you. You'll be escorted out one door, they'll be escorted out another, and there's nothing to connect those two places. So if you've done your job, you get to go on, you know, and that's all well and good. Okay? So that's the first thing you need to know, is that these things will just be handled. God will take care of the oppressors. You don't even have to feel the need to get even with them. You don't have to feel the need to try to reduce other people's punishment. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do. I'm just saying you shouldn't feel the absolute need. Many things in this world, you know, environmentalists are probably the nastiest for telling you that if you don't do what they want you to do, you're going to regret it. You know, the earth is going to come to an end. Your life is going to suck and it's all going to be your fault. And that you'll get what you deserve for not having stood up to this and that and this and that. And God says no such thing. He says, I will fight your battle for you. Take his word for it. That's probably another big, huge, I mean, that if I could top off and have this be the biggest thing you ever know, is number one, trust God. Trust that God is going to do what he said he was going to do. I know it's very easy given your short span of life on this planet, or looking back on your parents or your grandparents, and they may have faced tons of injustice. They may have suffered horribly at the hands of someone, and then ultimately died at the hands of someone. All that may very well be so. And I'm not saying, I'm not saying don't do anything. I'm just saying you don't have to. God says he blesses the peacemakers, for instance. I don't know if that entails busting somebody's head open that really deserves it, instead of getting peace, to get peace. It usually doesn't happen that way. His brother usually comes and beats your head open, and then we just start a riot. That's what typically happens. I should know. I've worked in places where riots happen. It says, I've never seen a beating stop something. Beatings only start things. You may think it stopped, but it's just got a lid on it for the moment. Trust me, it's down there and the temperature's gone up. And it's going to boil over at some point. Okay. Let me reveal something to you that you may not know. This earth that we live on, it is a third level world. It is a third rate world. There are two levels that are better than this world. This world is called a telestial world. Where God lives, the top one, is called a celestial world. If you want to have descriptions of a different kind of world, you don't have to describe a telestial world. You're living on one. This is the existence this world has, the kind of people who are here. There's all kinds of people here, but among those people, there are telestial people. And there's quite a few of them. The next step up is called the terrestrial world. If you read your Bible in Genesis and read about the Garden of Eden and the conditions there, as far as I'm aware of, that's a telestial world. Much nicer. No weeds. Things grow on the trees. Animals are nice to each other as opposed to how they are here on Earth. Everything's kind of idyllic. We don't have a description of the celestial one, the top one, the best one. We don't even have a standard for comparison. It's where God exists, and it's better than the Garden of Eden. I don't know what that is, but it is. Know that you're on a third-rate world. What's going to happen when all these things in Revelation happens? That's when the earth changes levels. Christ, if you have a religious background, Christ will come. He will finish this state. The telestial state will come to an end. All those people who like a telestial world, this becomes the most important part of the whole thing. If you are comfortable with the way this world is, with the way this world works, I usually think of politicians. I think politicians are pretty comfortable with the way things are here. They've pretty much got a pretty good handle on things. Even if things go bad, they can still pull it out and they can still stay on top. I don't want to say all politicians are telestial people. I think it's a pretty safe assumption that all very successful long-term politicians are probably telestial people. And that's a generalization. I don't want to be rude. All those people are going to be gone. You can't have a terrestrial world, T-E-R-R-E-S-T-I-A-L. Well, I'm doing that in my head. That's pretty good. I think that's right. All terrestrial people, if you have a terrestrial world, by nature, it cannot have celestial things in it. That includes people. So those people will simply be gone. It's like when you get rid of a prison, all the prisoners are gone. You know, COs may get to go home, probably. But all the prisoners will be gone. They'll be shipped off somewhere else. And that's what happens to all these telestial people. They'll be shipped off somewhere else to a permanent telestial place. This place is kind of a testing ground right now. All kinds of people are here. You have telestials, terrestrial people, and celestial people. Now, these things are not set. You are not born into one thing or the other. Okay? Depending on how things go on this world, you will be, it will be determined what kind of a person you are. And God does, and it's very, very organized, and I'm sure it ends up being very just. Because of what Christ did, while you are here on earth, and for a little while after that, you will be offered mercy. You'll have chances to make up for your mistakes. Anyway, that building that we were talking about in the analogy, the vacant building that got taken over by the vagrants, that's a telestial circumstance. When the owner comes through, of course, he's gonna clean out the whole place. He's not gonna leave it there. It isn't a deal because he's gonna bulldoze it. He's gonna destroy it, and he's gonna build some nice little, you know, apartment building for people who can afford better. Is that a good enough analogy for you? It's the same analogy of turning a telestial world into a terrestrial one. If you feel like it's unfair that this is happening, well, where will I go if I'm a telestial person? And you go, you know what? Nobody cares. You may care, but that's your problem. So I don't care. I don't intend on being a celestial person. I don't care where they go. They go to a place much like this. Except, in the ultimate place, there are no other people besides celestial people. I think that'll be interesting because you won't have any nice people to pick on anymore. You'll just have all the crappy people that like picking on each other. So it'll just be a big pick fest. I don't know how pecking order will go, but I know that it probably won't be as enjoyable. Because you won't have, you know, nice people to pick on anymore. The nice people don't go there. Just people like you go there. Not you. Well, celestial people go there. And that's what's going to happen here. God is not going to come. He's not coming to do a paint job. He's not coming to scrape the floors. You know, he's not coming to do a remodel. He's coming to do a demo job, as my friend would say who has now passed away, Bob Dyke. He's coming to do a demo job. The place is stripped completely. It is destroyed. And then the new thing is built. You would not know that the old thing was there. And that's the way it goes. Everybody who is associated with the building, they go too. I had them going to reform school. They actually go to someplace worse from which there is no return. It isn't a place that's worse. It's just a place from which you cannot return. That's the difference. It's a place like Earth, but you can't get off of it. If you think you might be able to build a rocket, get off of there and get up to the nicer ones and try to wreak havoc up there because you think, you know, it's always fun to take out people who think that they're safe. You know, a thief loves to defeat an alarm system just to prove that he can't be outdone. Well, you know what? In this case, they will be outdone. They can't get off the darn planet. Maybe. I don't know all the logistics of how it works. I just know that they will be in a place that they cannot escape. They cannot force their way into something better or whatever. So, there it is. That's what I have to offer you today. That's what these three things, I guess that was kind of what the whole thing was about. And to say one basic thing from a guy, and this is coming from me, from a guy that doesn't fit in, here's my advice to you, final advice. don't bother trying to fit in. Do you want to be the one in the building when it comes crashing down? When the owner comes to retake possession? Do you want to be the person who, you know, do you want to be the person that when everybody else is miraculously lifted up into the air, when they send in the flamethrowers to clean off this earth? I think that's actually, I think I'm embellishing just a little, but not much, to how it'll ultimately go. Do you want to be the person down there? Because he's not saying, okay, everybody, come on. Because he's not that sort of a person. I seem to recall that when Jesus went to the temple and saw the money changers, he did not, the scripture gives no indication that he gave warning. If there's any warning of what's going to happen in the future, you've already had it. How many thousands of years have we had the book of Revelations with? Maybe 2,000 years. That's a pretty long time. That's a pretty good warning. You know, we've had the papers down the planning office for 6 months. Hey, it's been in the Bible for 2,000 years, and you people all say you're Christians. And yet now you're going to start complaining and whining and moaning that you're not ready, that you need a little more time. 2,000 years isn't adequate to pull things together. To convince yourself that you should have started from day one trying to be a decent person. Trying not to oppress other people, although you really love the money. I know you did. Can't save you. Can't, no excuse. I have no thought that there will be any excuses made. There will not be any, let's round up all the people and start separating them out. Everybody in the building is going. If there is any, you know, rifling to be done, it will be done at a later date. Everyone will be essentially gassed. Everyone will be essentially thrown to the floor. Everyone will be essentially, anybody who's still left on this planet, anybody who's in the building is what I'm saying. You're going to be treated like a riot happened. And they may very well sort you out later. But you don't know how long that time will be. You don't know how long you're going to be stuck in those black zip ties. You don't have a clue. So, with all these pleasant analogies placed before you, here's the final advice one more time. From a guy who didn't fit in the first place, I've got a special little break here. You know, I mean, I can do plenty of things wrong. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm not even saying I'm do something better, because I'm, you know, that all depends on the kind of people we are, what we ultimately do. But you need to know that you're in a worse circumstance than I am, at least on this score. Because for some reason, for some sick, strange reason that I don't comprehend because I'm an alien, you guys have this weird need to go and be in the building. And I'm saying, stay away from it. You might do better to just, you don't have to be like me, but you may want to act like me and not make an appearance in the building. Don't go in there. Don't be enticed. Don't do it. You will, you know, the chances of you being in the building when the big time comes are getting far, far better the more time passes. Don't do it. I don't care how fun it looks. I don't care how interesting and how exciting it seems. Don't do it. Just a warning from me. And you know me, I'm somewhat a dispassionate person. When I express any kind of care for you at all, it must be some other reason besides my own personal self-interest and need to love, because I don't really have much of that. What I'm telling you is that I think you guys are okay, but you need to stay out of the building. Don't get involved in telestial things. Don't get involved in the things that mark this place, the telestial world. Maybe we'll have to get another broadcast to talk about some of those things. But don't do it. You will be, I don't know what you'll be. Some people will be very comfortable and happy going on to this stuff. I can picture that drug kingpins, I can picture that gang leaders and stuff like that will be very happy to be in a telestial world. Are you those kind of people? If you are, you're doing just fine. You know? For those of you who really don't want to be around those people for the rest of whatever, my advice is stay away from it. Stay away from it. Don't get near it. Don't touch it. Don't do it. I don't care how enticing it is. Don't do it. Take it from a guy that feels no such enticements. You don't want to do it. I guess I'm lucky in a way. You guys could call me lucky in a way, but let me tell you, you never do. And that's okay. But be careful. Be careful. You may be picking on, chastising, oppressing the people who are getting off this rock. And God's going to punish the oppressor. Be careful who you oppress. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to part three, the final part of this little run of The Speech. This has been episode number 686. You're listening to The Life Autistic. If you would like to comment, say anything at all, the email address is autism, AUTISM, at quix.us. And this is Jay Nemro, and I want you to have a great day.